Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Megan Murphy. Megan Murphy is a writer and journalist from Vancouver, BC. She founded Feminist Current in 2012, which has since grown to be the leading feminist website in Canada, as well as a global presence. Megan is currently working on a book that critiques third-wave feminism as a modern anti-feminist backlash. Well, that's something else we can talk about, certainly, Megan. So, first, tell us about yourself, and second, tell us about some current controversies, including Twitter and including your book.
So this question of telling you about myself has thrown me off immediately. I don't know what to say. So I'm a writer. As you mentioned, I run Feminist Current, which is Canada's leading feminist website, although it has a global reach also. I also do a podcast called Feminist Current. I have in recent years started talking more and more about gender identity ideology and gender identity legislation, because these policies and laws are being passed across North America and the UK and in other countries without much public debate, as far as I can tell. And I and many other people have concerns about the impacts of these laws.
What laws are you talking about?
Gender identity laws that say, for example, that allow for male prisoners who identify as trans women to be transferred into female prisons, policies that allow men to use women's change rooms at, say, the pool, at community centers, things like that, if these men identify as trans women. Policies that are allowing men to compete against women in sports competitions and play on women's sports teams. Policies that would allow men to access women's transition houses, so transition houses for women who are escaping male violence, for example. These are all things that are happening really quickly, and there hasn't been much room to push back or ask questions. One of the questions that I've been trying to ask is, you know, what does it mean to be a trans woman? So how are we defining a trans woman? What does it mean to be transgender in general is a question that I'm interested in having answered, because nobody seems to be able to define that word or idea in a coherent way. But if we're going to say things like trans women are women, which is a common mantra repeated by trans activists, trans women are women, trans women are women, then I want to know what a woman is. How are we defining woman? How are we defining trans woman? What does this mean? Because as far as I can tell, based on the rhetoric that we're hearing from trans activists, transgenderism and being a trans woman, or literally being a woman, is based solely on self-identification, which means that on a Tuesday, a male could identify as a man, and the next day he could decide to identify as a woman and walk into a woman's change room, and no one could say anything.
And I just want to add that in any case, self-identification is almost meaningless. That I could identify as a Hall of Fame baseball player, and I have never played professional baseball, but it doesn't matter. I mean, the words have meanings. I could identify as a dog, but that doesn't make me a dog. There's a great apocryphal line attributed to Abraham Lincoln, which is somebody supposedly asked him, "So if you count a tail as a leg, how many legs does a dog have?" To which he supposedly answered, "4. Calling a tail a leg doesn't make it so."
Right, exactly. And I mean, I think that...
I can self-identify as a plumber. Do you want me to fix your house?
No, that's okay, thanks. But exactly, and I suspect that some people who might consider themselves to be allies to trans-identified people or to the trans rights movement might consider or label, you know, our commentary here as kind of glib or insensitive. But at the same time, I mean, it's not untrue. And so long as we're refusing definitions of words, we're refusing to define the words that we use, we're refusing to define the terms that we're using, then they are meaningless, and it is silly. I mean, I don't know how we're supposed to have any kind of coherent conversation if we're all using words that don't mean anything, or if we're using words that we're all defining in different ways based on our preferences, our personal preferences, our political preferences, whatever.
And especially this is true when I completely agree with you, and then it is especially true, I mean, for crying out loud, you know. So I tried this when I was a teenager. I would come in much later than I was supposed to come in, and my mom would say, "You're late." And I would say, "Define late." And my mom would say, "I am not playing that game with you. Late is after the time you were supposed to be here." I mean, self-identification of not being late doesn't work. I mean, and this is true just on every level. And then I think about this, especially in terms of policy, that for crying out loud, I once got a parking ticket. And why did I get a parking ticket? Because I parked where the sidewalk was blue, and that was a bus station. It was the most deserved parking ticket I ever got.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is that it's defined. You can look here. The curb is blue. You can't park here. The curb is blank over there. You get to park there. Law is about definition, and I'm just stunned that they are changing public policy when they can't even define the basic words like woman.
Right. And they're changing public policy not only in a way that, as I mentioned earlier, you know, has real impacts on the safety of women and girls and women and girls' rights, but also, you know, trans activists are now insisting, I mean, I don't believe this is true, but trans activists are insisting, and they're pushing to criminalize people who do things like misgender. I don't use the term misgender. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm using their terms. Misgender and who dead name. Like literally they want to throw people in jail for referring to trans women as male, despite the fact that by all accounts
they are male.
They are male. I mean, there's no, if trans women could prove to us that they were not male in some way, then we could perhaps be having a different conversation, but they haven't been able to do that because they are male in every way. Especially if we're only talking about self-identification. I mean, I don't personally believe that a man can become a woman through surgery and through going on hormones. But if we were defining transgenderism or being a trans woman in that way, then we could be having that conversation, but that's not how it's defined. So we can't have that conversation either. So the conversation we're having right now is that, as we just discussed, you know, a man who self-identifies as a woman literally is female, and anyone who disagrees with that or questions that idea should be thrown in jail. That's what they're actually pushing for. I'm not exaggerating. People, like, there are trans activists who are trying to criminalize me and have me prosecuted for understanding that biological sex is a real thing.
I think the possibility of writing satire has ceased to exist.
I know. I mean, they've done it for us and pushed even beyond that.
I mean, let's just say this again. So they are pushing for people who call a male he, and male is well-defined term having to do with producing the mobile gametes, and male sexual reproduction actually goes back more than a billion years. And they are declaring it illegal, or trying to make it illegal and punishable to call a male he or a female she. And in fact, there was a guy in Virginia who just lost his job because he refused to call a she he. And they had come up with a compromise where he would address the person by her name, but that was not sufficient, and he was fired.
Wow. Yeah.
And I want to say one more thing before we move on, which is the ACLU has been a very strong defender of the free speech of pornographers, and just an absolutely staunch defender of that one can say anything they want, including pornography. But of course, on this particular issue, the ACLU is not defending the right of a teacher not to be compelled to speak things he doesn't believe.
Interesting.
Anyway, so let's talk about you and Twitter. There's a recent thing happened that has made some noise around the world.
Right. So, I mean, this is potentially a little bit of a long story, just because I tend to like to go through all the details of what happened, because I feel like there's been some misunderstandings about why I was banned from Twitter, or misrepresentations online. But essentially, you know, I've been on Twitter since 2011. I never had any issues with Twitter. As I said, I've been talking about this gender identity issue, ideology, this legislation for you know, a few years now on Twitter. I really have not minced words, so I don't use the pronouns that trans activists demand I use. So I do refer to trans women as male and as he.
You use the physically accurate pronouns.
Right. I accurately sex people. And as of in August, my account got locked down a couple of times. I was made to delete a few tweets that had to do with a local man named Lisa Kret, who is involved in the labor movement here in Vancouver. He identifies as a sadist. He has that on his business card. I'm saying he because he's male, to be clear. I guess now he's identifying as a trans woman. I don't know if he literally identifies as female or what. I don't know what he means by trans woman. About a year ago, he publicly identified himself as a eunuch, which would imply that he is a male, not a female. So I'm not sure when he decided to start identifying as a trans woman. In any case, I was tweeting about him because he was behind a push to defund Vancouver Rape Relief, which is a local women's shelter and rape crisis line here in Vancouver, at the BC Federation of Labor convention in 2016. So they voted to blacklist Vancouver Rape Relief at that convention.
Okay, just a second. So I don't care what anybody's politics are. It seems to me that defunding a rape relief organization, this is like defunding a home for orphan children, or defunding, I mean, this is if you're going to have social services in your community, it seems like this is I don't understand how this doesn't destroy all credibility on the side of anybody who would want to do that. Somebody who wants to defund, even if you disagree with their politics on a bunch of other things, anybody wants to defund a rape relief organization, there's something wrong with them.
I know. Well, it's only punitive. It's only an attack on women. I don't see how it can be seen any other way. I mean, there's not enough spaces for women who are trying to escape male violence in the first place at all. You know, there's a lack of services for women who are trying to escape male violence. And if you're trying to defund the spaces that do exist so that it's harder for women to escape male violence and find safe spaces, then I can only see that as, you know, an attack on women, essentially. So in any case, so I tweeted about this. This Lisa Kret person was also responsible for getting our ads pulled from Feminist Current. He publicly bragged about that. He also was behind a smear campaign against a local activist here in Vancouver, an anti-poverty activist named Yuli Chan. And Twitter locked down my account and made me delete all these tweets. The tweets weren't offensive. You know, there's no hate speech in them. I was just stating facts about what happened and identifying this person as the individual responsible, and it wasn't a secret. You know, this is information that's public. And then I complained about my account being locked down for that, as saying, "Hi, Twitter, I'm a journalist. Am I no longer allowed to report facts on your platform?" And I posted a screenshot of the email from Twitter, and then they made me delete that one. And then you know, after a few months, my account was locked down again for tweeting men aren't women and for tweeting what is the difference between a trans woman and a man. So I deleted those tweets. You know, I did everything that Twitter asked me to do. Twitter, when they lock down your account, they'll say, like, you can't get back on until you delete these tweets, and then they list the tweets. And it's annoying, and it makes me mad that I'm having to delete tweets that, to me, are not, you know, violating any kind of rules. The rule that they cite is hateful conduct, but I don't understand how it's hateful conduct just to post facts that are public information already just because they're critical of a trans activist.
But men aren't women. I mean, that's... I'm sorry, that's physical reality. A man is defined as an adult human male, and a woman is defined as an adult human female. And you may as well get banned for saying that trees aren't mushrooms.
Yeah, I know, it's ridiculous. Like, the fact that you're not allowed to tweet men aren't women. And, you know, the thing is that some people are allowed to tweet that men aren't women. It's just that I'm not allowed to tweet that men aren't women. Because Ben Shapiro also tweets that men aren't women, and his account has not been suspended.
And also, I don't know anything about Twitter, but because it's associated with the internet, I'm presuming that there is a bunch of pretty skeevy stuff that goes out on Twitter that is completely allowed.
There's pornography all over Twitter. There's huge pornography accounts that are just pornography on Twitter, and Twitter never does anything about them.
They don't violate community standards there.
Apparently not. But I mean, I've gotten really violent direct threats on Twitter, and Twitter hasn't shut down those people's accounts. So, I mean, they picked me out specifically on purpose. And they did it because a couple of trans activists have contacts at Twitter.
One of whom goes by the name... One of them is a self-described sadist, by the way.
Yeah. So the other thing, the thing that actually finally got me suspended was a tweet about someone who in the media was being identified as JY, who was going around asking estheticians to give him a Brazilian bikini wax. And when those estheticians declined and said, we only offer this service for females, he tried to sue them. So, you know, he essentially tried to extort money out of these women based on this new trans trend. And somebody, a blogger, discovered his real identity and wrote a long blog post about it with lots of evidence and proof of who this person was. I tweeted a link to this blog post and said, you know, is it true that JY is actually name redacted? And then posted evidence that someone else sent me or posted on Twitter. I can't remember. In any case, it was a screenshot of one of his reviews of an esthetician saying, like, so-and-so did a great job on my wax. So I posted that screenshot. It had his face and his name attached, his male name, and said, yeah, it's him. And then 2 weeks after I tweeted that, my account was permanently suspended. And that was the one tweet that they cited. And they told me that I violated the hateful conduct rule. So I assume that this was based on this new misgendering rule that Twitter has enacted that actually they didn't inform their users about. So when I tweeted that, as far as I knew, there was no rule against calling a male a man. But nonetheless, my account was suspended. And this person publicly, also publicly bragged about having me personally suspended. So he essentially has a contact at Twitter, and they suspended me despite the fact that, from my perspective, I didn't break any rules. I didn't do anything wrong. He was just after me because I was talking about him, and he just didn't want people talking about him and what he was doing.
And to be clear, what he was doing is wanting females to wax his genitals, and if they refused to touch his genitals, then he was suing them.
Right.
Which is pretty messed up right there.
Yeah, and I mean, there was some other information that had come out about him that is pretty gross. So he's also trying to keep that information under wraps as well. And ironically, that information came out because he tried to sue these women. So the defense lawyers discovered some information about him that they were going to bring into the case. And he didn't want that information going public, so going into the media, so he dropped the case.
So I'm okay either way. Do we want to say the thing about how he wants to advise young girls, or do we not want to say that?
Well, you can say it.
Okay. So part of my understanding is one of the other things, the information that got out, is that he is asking women all over about how he can basically, would it be appropriate when he is in a women's restroom to approach young girls and help them insert their first tampon? That's more or less accurate, right? And you don't have to say anything if you're not allowed to say anything.
I mean, that's information that I've seen online.
Okay. So yeah, this is not what we would call a normal person. In any case, so because of this, you have been banned from Twitter for life, and I have seen one response to you getting banned from Twitter for life to be, so what, this is not a free speech issue. Twitter is a private company, and they can do whatever they want. And so what's your beef? This is like getting kicked out of a McDonald's for bad behavior.
Well, I mean, first of all, Twitter suspended me in order to protect somebody that I believe is a predator. So they're protecting a man from being accountable for his behavior, which is harmful to women and potentially harmful to girls. And so, I mean, that seems to go against their terms of service. They claim to want to protect people from violent threats and harassment and bullying and things like that, and yet they're protecting this person who's potentially a danger to women and girls.
They're also promoting photographs of sexual assault through much pornography.
Right, and yeah, exactly. And they're allowing, you know, graphic violence on their platforms. So, I mean, it's hypocrisy at the very least. But, you know, I mean, Twitter is a private company. So, sure, there's an argument that you could make that says, well, Twitter is allowed to decide what's said on their platform and who is allowed to use it. But at the same time, I mean, if Twitter and social media, we all know this is where conversations happen. And Twitter is a company that has, you know, made billions and billions of dollars based on, you know, promoting itself and selling itself as a place to share information, to have conversations, to engage, to have debates. It's the new public square, essentially. And for somebody like me, who's a writer and a journalist, I mean, journalists almost have to be on Twitter. It's very hard to function without Twitter for a number of reasons. First, to, you know, just follow news stories and things like that, to promote our own work, but also to connect with sources, to get work, to connect with editors, to connect with other journalists. this is how the world works nowadays. And I mean, a private business isn't allowed to kick somebody out, you know, because they're black. A private business isn't allowed to, you know, like a restaurant isn't allowed to kick somebody out for political reasons. And that's essentially what Twitter is doing. They've suspended me for life because I was speaking critically about trans activists. So it was, I mean, it could be argued that it was an ideological choice, that it was a political choice. And again, really, it was just about protecting this one man. But it's not, I mean, if you have terms of service, then you should enforce your terms of service, and that's not what they're doing.
So for me, there's a larger issue here, which there's a couple larger issues. One of them is that if Twitter, Facebook, etc. are in fact the new public square, then, and same with Wikipedia, there are, I think at the very least, one of the things that I think both you and I should do is make very clear to readers, and readers understood that corporate newspapers spun things to their corporate advantage. There's a great line by Henry Adams 100 years ago, the press is the hired agent of a moneyed system set up for no other reason than to tell lies where the interests are concerned. So we would know that they would slur things in their favor. And I think it's very important for people to recognize that these new public squares have the same old problem of they're promoting very specific agendas or very generalized agendas, either way. And this, we need to be just as aware as ever that that what we see is spun. And in this case, that's one little soapbox. And the other soapbox I want to jump onto has to do with when I, last night I needed to look up something about, the history of sexual reproduction. I want to know how long beings have been sexually reproducing. So I went to Wikipedia and saw that it's 1.2 billion years. And then I wanted to look up something about Prince Charles II. And I did. Where did I go? I went to Wikipedia. And the point is that we all sort of think that Wikipedia is a source of information, but I have, if you go to the Wikipedia pages of anybody who has ever said anything remotely pro-women and not bowing down to the whole trans ideology, you'll find that their Wikipedia page, much of it will consist of a slam against them. And likewise, if you go to the Wikipedia page for example, Pat Califia, who has written child torture porn and is a trans activist and is a queer theorist and has, again, written child torture porn, I tried to get Wikipedia to acknowledge that, and I almost got banned from Wikipedia for doing that. And yeah. My point is that there's where I want you to go with this, if you want to, is to talk about the takeover of anti-woman forces in IT.
Yeah, I mean, that part is really scary. And that's, I think, it's not just about Twitter. You know, like, some people might think it's silly to be concerned about being banned from Twitter. Like, you know, oh, Twitter is not real life, or Twitter, it's just a social media site, it's just silly, it doesn't matter. But it's not just happening on Twitter. I mean, first of all, Twitter is quoted in the media. Like, the New York Times publishes articles that include tweets. Like, this is the world we're living in. This shapes discourse. This shapes conversation. And the fact that Twitter is making these decisions and banning certain women for speaking out about transgender ideology and gender identity legislation, which is incredibly sexist ideology and sexist legislation that endangers women and girls. But they're shaping discourse so that it appears as though the public is on side with these ideas. And the public's not on side with these ideas. I mean, most people in the world believe that biological sex exists and don't believe that men can become women and don't think men should be allowed in women's change rooms. But they're intentionally purging people who tell the truth about this and who ask questions about this, so that they can present this false narrative. And, you know, Wikipedia bans radical feminist editors. I was told, I'm not an editor at Wikipedia, but I was told by somebody who wasn't an editor at Wikipedia that they recently banned the last radical feminist editor over there. And you're right that radical feminist pages are edited in this incredibly slanted, biased way, sometimes to include things that aren't even true, by people who are trans activists or who are pro-prostitution or who don't like radical feminism for whatever reason. And Wikipedia is looked at as a source of facts. And when people are altering facts to suit their own political agenda, I think we should be incredibly concerned about that. And, you know, Facebook does similar things. Facebook bans people for political reasons or sort of hides articles and promotes other articles and promotes certain ideas and hides other ideas and punishes people for, you know, posting things that don't suit their agenda. Google picks and chooses what shows up in their algorithm. So when you search for something, one article will come up and another won't. And it's not necessarily because the article that does come up is more legit somehow or is more popular. They hide things for political reasons in Google. WordPress has banned people for this, I guess, for this misgendering or dead naming things. I'm not positive, but obviously something to do with trans activism and protecting trans activists. They took down that blog post and banned the woman responsible for writing it, the person who wrote the blog post about JY, who discovered his real identity. They took that post down and banned her from WordPress. So this is happening in all sorts of ways, not just on Twitter.
Well, and you and I have shared a sad experience recently on books. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I can go first, I guess. Yeah, I mean, so beyond social media, this is obviously also happening in real life. The no platforming thing that happens to women who are critical of trans activism is also real. So women are, you know, women who speak about this, their events are getting shut down and things like this, or they try to shut down their events. I have been working
through threats of murder and rape, by the way, too.
Right, exactly. I mean, I'll get to the book thing, but yeah, I mean, I'm doing an event on January 10th at the Vancouver Public Library to talk about trans or gender identity ideology and women's rights. And we've gotten a number of really graphic violent threats through Eventbrite, which is the site that we're selling tickets through. So people can send anonymous threats through that site for whatever reason. We've obviously taken those threats to the police, but those threats are directed at me, and most of them are misogynist, and some of them are sexualized. And nonetheless, Vancouver's new mayor, Kennedy Stewart, when asked to comment on this event and the controversy surrounding this event, he referred to the event and my speech at the event as despicable, and said nothing about the violent threats who are threatening my life and threatening the safety of people who are going to be attending the event. So, you know, when we're being positioned, you know, I say we as in those of us who are critical of gender identity ideology, we're being positioned as hateful, as bigoted, as violent, and we're just trying to have conversations about women and girls, and we're trying to ask questions about this ideology. And meanwhile, these people are literally threatening us with violence and making people afraid to attend these events and to speak about this issue. It's like the craziest reversal ever, and these people are the ones being protected and we're the ones being vilified. But in any case, so I've been working on a book for the past 2.5 years, maybe a little more than that, with a local publisher here in Vancouver, and it's a critique of third wave feminism. So there's two chapters in it about gender identity and transgenderism, but it's not the basis of the entire book. The rest of the chapters are about other aspects of third wave feminism. I'm critical of prostitution, I'm critical of objectification, I'm critical of pornography, I'm critical of BDSM. So there's chapters that address those issues. As far as I knew, the publisher was on board with my critiques of gender identity ideology. My editors were really supportive. I had not been informed that there were any serious concerns about what I was saying. I agreed to their suggested edits in certain areas. You know, they wanted me to not use pronouns, which I did try to do because, I'm not willing to call men she. So I was trying to compromise by trying to avoid pronouns entirely, which is very difficult and not something that I'm a fan of doing. But, you know, they're not a particularly controversial publisher, so I didn't want to get them in too much trouble. And a few weeks ago, I got this email totally out of the blue from the owner of the company, a man, telling me that he couldn't publish the book because he didn't want to hurt people's feelings. So I was shocked.
Wait, let's just have a moment of silence for the end of discourse. I mean, I really want listeners to let that sink in, that a person did not want to publish a book because it would hurt someone's feelings. This is, we have gone a long ways from Pulitzer saying a journalist should have no friends.
Well, and you know, and there was nothing in the chapters that were mean. That was mean.
Of course not.
Like,
of course
I
not.
I wasn't saying anything cruel. I was, you know, as it was quite tepid as far as my critiques of gender identity ideology goes. So the idea that, you're right, of course, but it's that hurting feelings is just about disagreement. You know, there wasn't anything hurtful or mean or cruel in any of those chapters. It was just that I was talking about ideas or disagreeing with concepts or asking questions about concepts that other people, you know, I don't even know how to, they don't want me asking those questions. I can't understand how this has turned into hurt feelings. I mean, I disagree with you or I ask questions that you don't want to answer and that hurts your feelings? Like, really?
Asking to define what is the word woman or defining woman as adult human female, that hurts their feelings. That should not be allowed. That is hate speech.
I mean, it's so manipulative to me because on my end, it's like, I don't believe that that hurts anyone's feelings. I think that people are saying this hurts my feelings or this is somehow hurtful or offensive to me so that they can shut down conversation. I refuse to believe that people get hurt feelings because I ask for a definition of a word. You know what I mean? It's not a personal attack on them.
Absolutely. And this is the state of discourse today.
Right.
So anyway, I responded.
So I responded to the publisher and I said, I'm totally confused. Like, what are the concerns you have about these chapters? You've never brought up any concerns before. You know, it had been one thing if there had been repeated issues and they had talked to me about them and I had refused to address these issues, but that's not what happened. And he refused to respond. So that's that. So I'm looking for a new publisher. It's fine. I mean, I'll be able to find another publisher and I'll be able to find a bigger publishing house that's better suited to publish the book. So I don't actually think it's the worst thing in the world in the end, for me anyway. But the principle of it is terrible and unacceptable.
Explicit call here. Anybody listening who runs a publishing house who wants to publish a really good book, now you know where to go. And I had a similar thing happen, that I had a book that was scheduled to come out in November, and I've been working with this publisher for 14 years, and they published all sorts of stuff, and because I dared to critique queer theory and had a little bit of a critique of trans activism, but not much, but mainly because I critique queer theory, and the publisher had held on to the book for 5 years. And I kept saying, do you want the book? And they kept saying yes. And then 2 months before it's supposed to come out, they cut it. They pulled the book. And they, I said in the chapter on queer theory that because queer theory is based on postmodernism, and postmodernism is really based on the notion that what we think is more important than what is real, and postmodernism is that there are only these competing stories and that there is no underlying reality, no physical reality. Therefore, the only way that postmodernists can win arguments is by shutting down discourse, by making theirs the only story, because, again, they argue there's no physical reality. So, you know, if you and I are arguing and you say to me, Derek, you are late coming back from this thing, and then you can look at your clock and say that I said I was going to be here at 6, but now it's 8. Yes, I am objectively late. But when postmodernism arguing that there is no reality underlying anything, male doesn't exist, female doesn't exist, they're all social constructions, then you cannot actually win an argument.
Right.
All you can do is shut up your opponent, because normally the way you win an argument is, Megan, I'm so mad at you because you know, you didn't walk across the street when you said you were going to, and you can say, well, I'm standing over on this side of the street, so yes, I did walk. I mean, you can show me by facts. But if you can't, but postmodernism says there are no facts, which puts us into this craziness. So I said in the chapter, the only way queer theorists can win arguments is by accusing other people of being hateful and then deplatforming them. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what my editor did. He said, that chapter is hateful, and I'm not going to publish the book. And even after reading it in the chapter. So there's another pitch. If somebody out there wants to publish that book, let's talk.
Right. I mean, it's so ironic because it's like they're doing the thing to you that is the thing that you're writing it about and criticizing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about, we have I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about, well, first off, let's be really clear. When you are accused of being hateful, what is your actual position? Like, does this mean that you hate little boys who want to play with dolls? Does this mean that you hate little girls who want to play with trucks?
Right, and I mean, it's the opposite. Like, it's so crazy, because what I say over and over and over again is that I want people to be themselves, and I want them to feel free to be themselves. So I want little boys to feel free to wear dresses and play with dolls if they want to, and I want little girls to feel free to play with trucks and play sports, or, you know, I want little, and have short hair and look however they want. I want people to live authentic lives, and I want them to feel good about themselves, and I want them to be free from harassment and discrimination. I don't want people to be harassed or discriminated against because of the way they look or because they don't conform to stereotypical gender roles. I mean, that's what feminists are fighting for. That's what feminists should be fighting for. And so the fact that I'm constantly being accused of being hateful or being, you know, a biological determinist, or, you know, rejecting the idea that there is some kind of gendered spectrum or something like that, is it shows either that people are not listening to what I'm saying, which I think is mostly true. I think that people don't read. I think that people tweet before thinking. I think that people often don't read my work and decide to hate me, and I can tell because the things that I tweet about, or that they tweet about me, are insane, and they tweet that things that I've never said before, and they misrepresent my positions. And I mean, I think that some people are just actually lying. I think they're just unethical people who have no qualms about lying in order to win public favor. But yeah, I mean, of course, that's what's so ironic, is that I want people to be able to live their lives in a way that makes them feel good and happy and free.
Pretty hateful.
Tell me about it.
So the last thing is, we've sort of gone over this, but what do you think... What do you think the effects of saying that men can be women? First off, what are those effects on women? Second, I know these are all huge, but do what you can with them. What are the effects of saying men can be women on women? Second, what are the effects of silencing dissenting voices on discourse in general? And third, how do you see this playing out, and or what do you want people to do?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that we should be allowed to have public debates. I do support free speech. I support all free speech. I think people should be allowed to say offensive things. I think people should be allowed to ask questions. I feel like people should be allowed to criticize popular ideology. And the fact that we as a society, not we as in you and me, are trying to shut down discourse that doesn't go along with popular narratives, I find really scary, because we should be having conversations, especially, again, when we're talking about creating laws and creating policies. I mean, women fought for the right to play sports against other women. I mean, that's something that was like a feminist win, because it's not fair for women to have to compete against men, obviously. And now there's men who are competing against women on sports teams and in sports competitions and winning. And, you know, so they can't compete in a fair way. I think that the issue of transferring men into women's prisons is a really big one. I mean, there was a case in the UK where a man named Karen White, who was convicted of rape, actually was transferred to a female prison and immediately assaulted four women. There was a case in Toronto of a woman who was at a recovery house for single women who are recovering from addiction, and they forced her to share a room with a man, and she had to leave because she felt so afraid and unsafe. And this is a woman who has been sexually assaulted, who has PTSD. And, you know, so she's not safe. She's trying to recover from some very difficult issues, and she has to leave this space that she was on a waiting list for to get into. He got to skip the waiting list because he's trans, and so he got special treatment. There's all sorts of repercussions that we're seeing happening already because of this new gender identity ideology and legislation. But moreover, I mean, what's happening is that they're criminalizing and censoring feminist speech. I mean, what we're talking about is basic biology and stating basic facts, but also what we're talking about is holding men accountable for their behavior, protecting women from male violence and from male predators, and from discussing a feminist critique of gender. We're talking about a feminist analysis of gender, and suddenly that's like practically illegal. Like, how are we supposed to have these conversations as feminists? How are we supposed to hold men accountable if the second that a man identifies as a woman, we're not allowed to talk about him? We're not allowed to talk about his past history, even if that past history includes violence. We're not allowed to talk about him as a man and therefore as a danger. We have to pretend that he's a woman and therefore not dangerous, because for better or for worse, perpetrators of violence are in general men, not women. It's not to say that all men are dangerous, but it is to say that, you know, men are the ones who perpetrate violence against not only women, but men as well. It really is like a total mind fuck. And it's just, yeah, it's a way to silence women, and it's a way to silence the truth and to let men kind of get away with whatever they want, and never be accountable for that, because now suddenly they're the most marginalized population on earth.
Well, thank you so much for that. Go ahead.
I mean, that was a lot of...
No, that's great. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, but I mean, we can see this happening with this JY person, right? I mean, we're not allowed to speak about him. I got suspended from Twitter for speaking the truth about him. I got my account locked down for speaking the truth about this Lisa Krupp person. So these are people who are going after women, who are, you know, predating on women, or trying to destroy women's lives, trying to take away women's income, trying to get women fired from their jobs, literally getting them no platform, stopping us from having careers and lives and from speaking and from having communities and from being able to participate in public discourse and in political activism. And these men are being rewarded and supported and protected, not only by other leftist activists, but by huge multi-billion dollar corporations like Twitter. And these, you know, feminist writers and activists, you know, I'm an independent feminist writer. I don't work for a company. I don't have sponsorship. I'm not independently wealthy. I've always been working class. I don't have some like secret stash of money hidden away anywhere. We're being vilified and silenced and being prevented from making a living and working and speaking to protect these men. And it's just... It blows my mind. It's psychotic.
And it's core to patriarchy, isn't it?
Indeed.
Well, thank you so much for this interview, and thank you for your work. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Megan Murphy. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.